This is episode 4 of season 4, Trash Talking with Eco Warriors, featuring Suma Reddy from Future Acres.
You're listening to Trash Talking with Eco Warriors, featuring inspiring stories from women in green business, sustainability, and conservation. Here's your host, Barbara Lee.
Hey, Eco Warriors. I'm so excited to bring you this week's episode for a couple of reasons. One, I've been trying to get Suma on the show for a couple of years, and I love that we were finally able to make that happen. Two, Suma is the kind of person that I really admire. She's doing some of the really hard work in tackling some huge impactful projects that are climate related, like building bioingesters and bringing our food sources closer to us. I was also incredibly moved by Suma's dedication to being a serial entrepreneur, which is really a hard pathway in life. So without further ado, let's jump into Suma's story. Let's get trash talking. Hey, Suma, welcome to Trash Talking.
Hey, Barbara. Great to be here.
Tell our audience who you are and what it is that you do.
My name is Suma Reddy, and I am the co-founder and CEO of Future Acres. We are building autonomous vehicles for the farm industry. So with a goal to increase production efficiency on farms, improve farm worker safety, and really mitigate climate and land impact.
Love that. And so glad to have you on the show. This is great because we tried to get you on an earlier season for the work that you're doing with Farm Shelf, but it didn't work out, so it's nice to finally have you on. In regards to what you're doing today with building autonomous vehicles for farming, how did you get into that? I don't imagine someone just wakes up one day and decides to build robots for farms.
Yeah, it's been a long journey. I think about 20 years now. But really, I think how it started is my first gig was in the Peace Corps in Mali. And I was really always interested in kind of these issues around access and opportunity and why there was that gap, you know, from person to person and place to place. So jumped in there and kind of got a grounding and an education on sort of the on the ground realities in different, you know, economies and cultures. Moved over to India, where I jumped into a microfinance company. So we were giving loans for assets like goats and chickens and cows, you know, working with 100% women in villages, started to kind of see how market mechanisms could play part in what we were doing. And then also kind of this low-tech solutions like having a database, for example. Then I really hardcore jumped into climate actually post-business school. It was 2009. Obama had just gotten elected. Joined forces with my cousin and we said, you know, let's invest and develop in utility scale renewable energy projects for a couple of years. That's what we did. Co-founded an organic waste to energy company through that, which is my first true entrepreneurial experience. And then second one, jumped into the indoor farming space for a few years.
Wait, you have to expand on all of that a little bit more. So what year was this when you started getting involved with the movement into this specific type of work?
It's just an incredible time to jump into climate. So 2009 was really when I started that piece of the journey.
So what were you doing? You said your cousin had started working on something and you had just jumped in.
Yeah, so he had this idea where he had background in project development and finance, you know, let's join and actually invest and develop utility scale renewable energy projects. So what that actually meant was we search and like comb the airwaves and the land waves for a developer who is, for example, thinking about building a 20 megawatt solar project outside of LA. And so, you know, at the idea stage, and we would say, okay, great, let's invest some capital into that so that we can figure out the land studies involved, you know, the interconnection agreement with the utility, you know, do all of this really groundwork so that you basically de-risk the project and enable it to be built. So we did that for solar. We did a 12 and a half megawatt project for small hydro in Oregon. So small hydro means, you know, how do you get power from existing irrigation canals? So we're not talking big dam power. We're talking, let's throw a generator in there and you don't have negative impacts on wildlife, things like that. And then my uncle was doing India's first and largest sugarcane waste to compressed natural gas project. That was a wild experience itself. So very long, hard projects. It takes, you know, 3 to 6 years really to get anything off the ground. So we started. And then I was really inspired by what my uncle was doing. So we decided to explore, you know, can we do anaerobic digestion in the U.S.? And so anaerobic digestion is the conversion of organic waste, food waste, agricultural waste, animal waste into energy. And it's really a closed loop system, which I find pretty fascinating.
Wow. Wait, Suma, what did you study in grad school?
I went to business school at Wharton. My undergrad was in sort of econ as well as religion. So I think what I've studied has no bearing on what I've done in life.
So then where did you learn all of this?
I got lucky. Like I think I really honed into having experiences. And so, you know, what that meant was that pay was very, very low, right? Obviously. But, you know, for me, the best way I learn is to actually do the things. And so it's really energizing and invigorating for me. Almost all the industries I jump into, I don't necessarily have a background in them, even the technologies. It's like anything, right? If you're doing it for 10 years, see the patterns and you see like, okay, every business is built the same way, every technology, every product, right? So you see the patterns and kind of that pattern matching and apply it. So I was a neophyte in the beginning with entrepreneurship, with technology, with project development, you know, and I would say I was a not great entrepreneur in the beginning.
Well, now I'm kind of curious, what makes someone a bad entrepreneur?
So I think a couple of the first founder foibles. One is, you know, thinking that it's going to go quickly, like, oh, I'm going to build a startup in a year, right? It's in hindsight, that's hysterical because it's so wrong. Part of that reason is the microfinance company I was a part of had already been around for 7 years, but I jumped in when it was converting from a nonprofit to a for-profit. And so within 4 months of me joining, it was getting venture capital money from Coastal Ventures and Sequoia Capital. But over time, right, I think I've honed a bit of a skill set. I think riding it now, like I'm really enjoying it now because it's a little bit less struggle than it was, you know, way in the beginning.
So you're like, great, it's so quick.
I sound like a total idiot and I'll own that. So, I mean, one, that it goes faster. Two, that ideas are actually important. I think any entrepreneur knows that it's all around the execution because most people have the same ideas. Ideas, I think, are really fun. As business people, most of us are innovators. We're not inventors, right? And innovators take things that have been invented over 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 100 years ago, right? You know, I've been in hydroponics. I've been in anaerobic digestion. Right now I'm in robotics. Like we're building right off the shoulders of a ton of great inventions that have happened, you know, for decades and even centuries. So I don't think I quite understood that, right? So there's a couple learnings there. So I'm grateful to have had the learnings, but one thing I realized, you have entrepreneurs who start at the age of 12, right? And, you know, I was really starting at the age of, you know, 28 and 30. And so I try not to compare myself to those folks who probably started at the age of 12 and hit their stride, you know, by the time they were 20.
Okay, so let's track back. You went to business school, then you fell into some business kind of serendipitously, and then you really got into stuff that impacts the environment in non-Western countries. How does that lead into everything that you've done, which has kind of centered on solutions for environmental problems?
Well, I think that kind of like stoked the flames where I started to understand climate on a much, you know, deeper level. And I started to jump into food systems, you know, with my uncle, with what he was doing with sugarcane waste. That seemed to open the door, right? I think this other piece of it was I was jumping into what's called hard tech, so hardware or industrial projects or really capitally intensive projects. So it started to feel like, okay, what I was drawn to was things that were impact driven and at the intersection of climate and agriculture and also hard tech with that. So I don't even know what I was thinking, right? I don't think I was thinking, right? And I didn't realize how challenging kind of that endeavor was. So the next company that kind of jumped into into was in indoor farming. And so we were building these bookshelf size indoor farms for corporate cafeterias and restaurants. An incredible, you know, experience, because it was really answering the question of, you know, why do we ship leafy greens and herbs, you know, 2,000 miles from California to New York, right? I think all of us intuitively know it doesn't make sense when you think about carbon footprint, the, you know, the costs around cold storage.
How fast it goes bad.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's incredible. And now you're doing robotics, which is really cool. I'm very taken by the fact that you don't have an engineering background, but you somehow keep coming back to how technology intersects with environmental issues.
I've been fascinated by physical solutions, right? These hardware solutions, and a lot of the things that aren't necessarily the sexiest, right, are things like infrastructure projects, right? Like building new tools. So with the robotics space, I think what's really interesting for ag tech and robotics is that we are again at this inflection point with commercialization. Like, how do we actually commercialize robotic solutions on farms, which is really challenging because, you know, think about the weather and the dust and the dirt. Putting anything out there is tough. And from a climate perspective, how we think about it is like precision agriculture. If we understand, you know, more data and more analytics around the farm, whether it's crop health or crop quality, you know, your soil, you know, or other environmental metrics, you can make better decisions around your resources, whether that's land or water or pesticides or fertilizer. And that's why we say precision agriculture, because it's trying to become more precise, right, about how we work with nature.
Love that. Suma, talk to us about all the other things that you do, because co-founding companies isn't the only thing that's like on your resume right now.
I teach a class technically called Entrepreneurship for Sustainability and Resilience at a product school in New York City. The byline of the class is Future of Food and Climate, Entrepreneurship as Activism. So really exploring, right, how we can use entrepreneurship as a tool for equity, access, and even maybe justice. Working on projects from, you know, bioplastics to regenerative agriculture, really looking at all these solutions for the future of, you know, food and climate. I'm also on an advisory board for Scale for Climate Tech, which is an awesome program from Second News for manufacturing companies. So companies that do have to manufacture in the climate tech space, we sort of help guide them through that process through a 1 year, very, very, very hands-on program, working with incredible advisors. Also a board member of GreenPro. It does, I know this sounds crazy, but like hermetically sealed kind of packaging for commodities like coffee and grains in Africa and East Asia and other countries. And so seemingly, right, a low-tech solution. But when we think about climate change, we have to think about storage. You can do cold storage or you can do dry storage. And this is a dry storage solution that low tech, right? But we need both our low tech and high tech solutions.
What's kind of interesting is that it seems like you're not focused on really small, obvious solutions. I think of obvious solutions like there's a lot of plastic waste from plastic bags, so we should start using reusable bags, right? That's very obvious. You're working on the state of food production and climate change and how these intersect with workers' rights in the farming space. So, you know, you just decided to build self-driving robots to solve that problem. What were you thinking when you went into building Future Acres, and what work are you doing with this company?
I think of myself, you know, as someone who's interested in technology, but also kind of in humanism, right? And I think when I think of humanism, I think of the environment, right? Because we all live in this world. And I also think about, right, how we treat our communities and people and the people who are working with and for. And that's sort of my vantage point when I think about advanced technologies, right, or hard tech and what we're developing. Yeah, it is trying to sit there and say, this is how, you know, the industry, it's going to change. And wouldn't it be great if we came into those developments like robotics and thought about, let's intentional about how we think about robotics. And there's a lot of, right, fears around displacement of workers and things like that. And instead, you know, try to lean into those conversations. So for example, for us, we know that most workers, right, on our farms are migrants, right? And it's a very complex issue that deals with policy, right, and social and immigration. So how we think about it
is, well, okay, one, in this era of climate change, it's getting actually a lot harder to do this kind of outdoor work.
Is it because of how much hotter the climate is?
Yeah, it's as simple as that. I think the New York Times published something maybe last month that was saying how they're going to change labor policies for specifically construction workers and agricultural workers. So then we think about what is the shift, like the future of the worker, right? The future of work. And so for us, we actually hired an organizer to think about, you know, our community engagement and skill building strategy to see, right, how do we plug in, you know, these farm worker communities to be training kind of these kids at vocational schools, right, if they want to, right, the mechanics or the operations, right, or maybe they become entrepreneurs and are the ones who rent these technologies or own these technologies and rent them out to farms.
Suma, what are some of the myths that you hear about climate or your work that you want to help dispel?
You know, a lot of people are like, what are the GHG emissions removed, right? Like, that's how we want to think about climate. And I think that's a fantastic goal, right? I worked in energy generation, and I think that's really important. But I remember when I worked in indoor farming, I'm like, that's really hard to calculate, right? And so if you're basing the success just purely on energy or a metric like that, then you're not getting to a lot of these root problems, because shipping something 2,000 miles, yes, you can say like, okay, there's a carbon footprint, but what does it mean, right, for society to have more localized food systems, right, where you're eating closer to where you grow the actual food? Similarly, with this robotic solution, what we're doing is we're creating collaborative robots that work with farm workers because they spend 2 hours a day hauling things by wheelbarrow, which is a technology invented in 231 CE in China. Let's change up this technology. It's kind of crazy. And so, you know, people are like, well, how does that impact climate? I don't say we're solving climate change, right? We're mitigating climate and land impacts, which means in the short term, it's getting harder to work outdoors, right? It is already hard. So let's take that piece of the puzzle out of the equation. So farm workers, right, have a less laborious, right, workday. And then two, right, we're building electric vehicles, right? So we're trying not to add negatively, right, to the land and those impacts. And three, right, we're building computer vision and AI technologies so that we can start to capture data.
Yeah, wow, that's eye-opening. Why do you care so much about the environment, Suma?
It's interesting because I think I'm just sort of a humanist. So just be frank, I think it's more this serendipity of like where my life went. I think it could have honestly been mental health, right? Like, could have gone down that path and said, I want to focus my energies around like mental health, right? And mental health technologies, as well as like those solutions. I think I tend to care about, and maybe intellectually as well, right? Things that just feel really interesting and feel like they have big impact, right? So environment, I would say, happened to me rather than me like 100% seeking it out.
Wow, love that. Anything else you want to leave the audience with?
You know, I would love more folks to kind of get into these spaces and think creatively about what spaces you want to get into. I think there's the stuff that we have just heard of, right? I would say, you know, think about things like agriculture, think about your wastewater treatment plants. I would love to see more types of people, you know, women, people of color, queer, right?
Wow, love that. Suma, thank you so much for being on the show.
Of course. This was such a pleasure, Barbara.
Well, I just about died laughing when Suma described how all the competing technology she is building was created in, which is the wheelbarrow, obviously pretty old. And if you've ever used one, you definitely think there has to be something better to use. I hope you enjoyed this conversation and felt as inspired as I did after hearing Suma's story. We're going to need a lot of different people who can help tackle this problem, which is huge, right? It's climate change. By the way, we're still running our giveaway contest on Instagram, so head on over to Trashy Beauty Co. and check out the posting. The prize contains a blue water bento and a bamboo spork from Eco Lunchbox, some beauty products from Plain Products, and a DIY sustainability cart set from last week's guest, Kate Gartner. All really fantastic items to start or continue your road to living green. Until next week, stay green, Eco Warriors.
Trash Talking with Eco Warriors is produced by Hansel Rodriguez. Production assistance by Belinda Chu and hosted by Barbara Lee. Thanks for listening to Trash Talking with Eco Warriors, For more inspiration, follow us on Instagram at trashybeautyco.